Hello and welcome to the GM Cancer Podcast. I'm Steve Bland, and this is the podcast that takes you inside cancer services here in Greater Manchester. We've got all the latest updates, the biggest developments, and everything that you need to know to stay across what's going on right here in our wonderful region. In this episode, we're talking about lung cancer. Now, lung cancer has been one of the worst hit cancers in terms of the pandemic, the impact that it's had on the number of patients being diagnosed, the impact it's had on treatment. It's been massive. So we're going to find out a little bit about that, but we're also going to find out all about two brand new projects in Greater Manchester that are designed to give patients with lung cancer better experiences and ultimately better outcomes. Now, the first, a new chest x-ray pilot, is all about earlier diagnosis. And the second, which is a one-stop lung cancer treatment clinic, is all about improving the patient experience right from diagnosis to the treatment as well. And I've got four really exciting guests to talk to. First, Matt Everson is the clinical lead for lung cancer at GM Cancer, and he's leading the one-stop lung cancer clinic. I've got Seamus Grundy, who is the clinical lead for the chest x-ray pilot. I've got Kath Hewitt, who is the lung cancer matron at Withenshaw Hospital. And I've got Karen Peplow, who is a Macmillan lung cancer nurse specialist. Now, Matt, before we get into the two projects that I mentioned, I think it's really important just to talk about where we are with lung cancer in Greater Manchester, what the challenges are, what the situation is, and I guess what the impact of the pandemic has been.
Lung cancer terrorises the communities of Greater Manchester in that it's the single biggest cause of premature death in Greater Manchester. So put simply, that if you're... Public Health England say that you've died prematurely if that's before the age of 70. And in Greater Manchester, the leading cause of that is lung cancer. So there's no bigger problem facing us in this region. And very, very sadly, it affects the most deprived communities disproportionately. It has a relationship with tobacco, and tobacco drives people into poverty, into illness, and into disability, and it causes this illness. That's why there's this, why it affects those communities the worst. With the great challenge with diagnosis is that it often presents late. It doesn't have many symptoms early on, or the symptoms that it does cause have so many other explanations for it. Having a cough can be one of the most common reasons that someone would go and see their GP or not go and see their GP because it's such a common symptom.
And of course, for more than 2 years now, we've been told that if we have a cough, absolutely do not go and see your GP.
Which for pandemic reasons is fine, but for... The crossover between COVID and lung cancer means that of all the horrible impacts that COVID has had, it's really affected the outcomes for lung cancer. And we were doing really well. We were figuring out how to beat this.
How do we get back, at the very least, to where we were 2 years ago?
Doing everything we were doing before, but doing it better and doing it faster and doing it at bigger scales. So I say we were starting to turn the tide. And if we are going to change the outcomes of this horrible disease, we've got to diagnose it earlier, we've got to diagnose it faster, and we've got to get people to treatment quicker. And we were doing it, and we were figuring out the ways of doing it, but the pandemic set everything back. So we're now there's a call to arms across the country of getting back on track and recovering from this and getting back to where we were and beyond it.
Matt, why is Manchester so badly affected by lung cancer? You know, we have certain challenges in different parts of the region, but there are other parts of the country too that have similar challenges. But why is Manchester so badly affected?
It's the combination of we have some of the most economically, socially affected areas in the whole country. And some of those areas are within Greater Manchester. So although there are areas of deprivation across the country. Greater Manchester has some of the highest levels, and combined with, and which often come hand in hand with, high levels of tobacco dependency, which is a major part of this disease. But any conversation we have about lung cancer, we have conceptualized it as a smoking disease, and that has some really positive things to it, because you can really try and drive public health messaging behind that. But one of the downsides to that is that you can be falsely reassured by not smoking, by never having smoking, that you could never have lung cancer. But if you've got a pair of lungs, you can get lung cancer. And the same problems exist for that. It's the same, that symptoms can be so commonplace that either someone doesn't feel that they need investigating, or there are very few symptoms, that makes it an incredibly hard condition to diagnose. The nerve supply to the lungs is virtually non-existent. You can't feel anything in your lungs. You can't. It's so well protected by the rib cage. You can't feel something that's there. So it's a really hard condition to diagnose, and that leads to late presentation and very poor outcomes from it. And they're the things we've got to address.
So Matt, how do we tackle this challenge of awareness then? Because, you know, it's not just lung cancer that faces this challenge. I'm thinking of bowel cancer now, where, you know, I've heard of people being diagnosed with IBS or not spotting symptoms, blood in their poo, tiredness, yeah, that kind of thing. They don't know what to look out for. And I guess lung cancer is the same. And GPs don't necessarily want everyone to go and see them every time they get a hint of a cough. There has to be some kind of filter, doesn't there?
What we kind of do. It says cautiously. You've got to take a multifaceted approach. So there's a huge part of education. So absolutely, for public education. But it's a bit more than just education. It's validation and it's endorsement. We did some public insight work in Greater Manchester about what are the barriers about going to see your GP or somebody else if you've got a cough. And there were some really quite sad or heartbreaking responses in that people can not sense that it's not worthy of the NHS's attention. And we are, again, flooded by this. The NHS is underfunded. It's overwhelmed. It's falling apart. Well, I'm sorry. I've just got a cough. You know, is that, I'm not worthy of that. And this isn't worthy of going to see someone. And we've got to get over that. And there's sort of key messages that if you've had a cough for 3 weeks or more, it has to be investigated. And that is worthy, it is right, it is appropriate. And that they are barriers. And sadly, it's sometimes those barriers are seen and felt the most in the most deprived communities, where the priorities of life, of work and employment and finances and social care become so dominant that it's easy to push other things to the side and be quite dismissive of those symptoms, or feel like it's not a high priority. So there's public education, but not just education. That's about endorsing and validating the reason. Say it's right that you do that. You're not going to be dismissed. You should go and get this checked out. And then there's medical education, and we've got some really, really good data that shows if you do have a cough, or if you're breathless, or you have pain in your chest for 3 weeks or more, the more and more chest x-rays we do, or the more and more referrals to hospital we do, the more cancers we'll find and the earlier we'll find them. And it's such a hard job in primary care, when you will see coughs all the time, every day of your working life. But we've got some real work to do to lower that threshold, to make sure that we are that 3 weeks or more, someone needs a chest x-ray, full stop. And that it's not driven by smoking status either, because of what I've said before, we can't conceptualize lung cancer as a smoking-related disease anymore. It alerts you, no doubt. It really puts you on red alert if someone smokes and they've got those symptoms. But it doesn't reassure you if they don't. So it's a combination of education on both sides. And then as a cancer service, we have to be ready to very quickly and efficiently assess those patients and get answers and say, no, this isn't lung cancer in 90% of them. But we have to have the system in place where we can do that very quickly, efficiently, with a good patient experience. And for the ones where actually we do find lung cancer, we have to get through quite a complex path of diagnosis and then figure out the right treatment and get that treatment started very quickly. So it works on every level through that system, from that person who is out there in the community who's coughing through to starting treatment. And we have to address every part of that pathway.
And that leads us beautifully onto the first of the two projects that we're going to be talking about today. And Seamus, I'll bring you in here. Matt was talking about the mission to diagnose people earlier as being really, really, really key here. And this chest x-ray pilot, that's what this is all about, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So I just kind of following on from what Matt was saying, we already had a problem pre-pandemic with picking up lung cancers and finding them early, because as Matt said, they're often the symptoms come through later than we'd like. But the impact of the pandemic has been really, really catastrophic. So we saw a massive, massive drop of the number of chest x-rays that were being done in the community at the start of the pandemic. And then we saw some recovery, but we're nowhere still, 2 years in, we're still nowhere near where we were at the start of, or pre-pandemic, in terms of the number of chest x-rays that were being done. We know that if you've got lung cancer, three quarters of lung cancers are visible on a chest x-ray. So it's a really good starting test to pick up on the possibility of lung cancer. It's easy, it's low risk, it's cheap, and it should be really easily accessible. So we're trying to recover from that position post-pandemic. And actually we're hoping that we'll be able to go further, actually increase the number of chest x-rays that we were doing even pre-pandemic. The reason why the number of chest x-rays has dropped is quite complex. And again, similar to what Matt was saying, there's some elements within the community, there's some elements around messaging, and there's some elements around how the healthcare system is now working. But we want to really reduce any barriers for people with symptoms accessing a chest x-ray. So we've got a really exciting pilot, which we're running a pilot initially in the Bury, Rochdale, Middleton area, which is due to launch fairly soon. And that allows patients with any of these symptoms, which are there for more than 3 weeks, to be able to walk in to the x-ray department and say, I've got these symptoms, can I have a chest x-ray, please? They don't need to go and see their doctor, they don't need to contact anybody. They will just be seen at the booking desk, fill out a form, say they've got those, assuming they've got those symptoms, and they're above the age of 40, because we know that the risk of lung cancer increases significantly after that age, then they'll be given a chest x-ray there and then on the day. Now, we'll pick up some lung cancers from that, and that'll be great, because I think it's likely that we'll be able to improve outcomes for that, for those patients, because as soon as we're suspicious on a chest x-ray, the patient will be pulled straight into the hospital service and we'll do all that diagnostic work that Matt was alluding to. But most patients will be reassured by their chest x-ray and we'll be able to send them a letter saying, your x-ray is normal, we'll let their GP know. But really importantly, if their symptoms persist, they do then have to get onto their GP and consult with them and get some medical advice. But yeah, the bottom line is the project is really about making access to chest x-rays, which is an extremely valuable tool, much easier for patients in our communities.
We've talked lots about a cough and people coming to see you if they have a cough, but what other symptoms should people be looking out for? If someone's listening now and they're just not sure, they know to look out for a persistent cough, but what else should people be flagging up? And what else would you take as a symptom for someone coming to this brand new service?
So cough is the one that we always go on about because it's one of the commonest symptoms, but it's also one of the commonest symptoms of anything. So it's very a vague symptom. Coughing up of blood is a really important symptom. And if you cough up blood, by all means, if you live in the area where we're running the pilot, go and get a chest x-ray, but you also need to go and see your GP or speak to your GP, because that requires further tests more than a chest x-ray in most cases. Chest pain lasts for more than 3 weeks, something to really think about very carefully and seek help. If you're feeling washed out, fatigued, lethargy, again, that for 3 weeks is justification enough to get a chest x-ray. But again, if the x-ray is normal, then you still need to seek that medical help, because there are loads of other causes for all of these symptoms. And that's really the biggest challenge that we face in the early diagnosis of lung cancer, is that A, it's often asymptomatic in the very early stages, and then B, when it starts to cause symptoms, those symptoms can be caused by a myriad of other things. And it's like picking out needles from a haystack. But unless we get enough needles to start with, we're not going to pick out the lung cancers. So we've got to get those tools, available to patients.
Matt, we talk about so many cancers as being really, really treatable if they're caught early. And we know that cancer treatment right across the board has improved off the scale in the last 5, 10, 15 years. Is lung cancer the same? And do you have the tools in your armory that if you do catch it early enough, you can treat it?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. There are highly, highly effective treatments for early stage lung cancer that involve having an operation to remove it, that involve having high doses of radiotherapy to destroy the tumor. So really effective treatments. There are treatments for every stage of lung cancer, where at whatever point it's found, but their success and effectiveness are at the very, very best in early stage, where we really stand this chance of cure.
Now, Seamus, before we hit the record button on this episode, you and Matt were talking about something to do with AI, and I won't pretend that I understood, but I wonder if you could just explain how AI fits into this big picture.
Yeah, so that's a slightly separate project, but very closely linked. So, I mean, artificial intelligence is growing massively within the healthcare setting at the moment, and for us, one of the really exciting opportunities is that there's a tool which can read chest x-rays initially. So up until now, either radiologists who are trained doctors or trained radiographers, but specialists, human beings, had to look at the chest x-ray, give us a report, tell us what it shows, and then we act on that report. But the computers or robots now can do that job for us in the first instance. So it's a first read, and that means that the AI tool can pick out normal from abnormal quite effectively. They're not perfect yet at saying that's going to be cancer, but they can definitely filter very effectively normal from abnormal. And we know that there's one of the biggest challenges actually in terms of the quick processing of these diagnostics is the human resources, the people that we need to review the images and tell us what they show. But if we can prioritize using an AI tool, which literally takes seconds for chest x-rays, then we believe that reprioritization of abnormal against normal will lead to significant improvements in outcomes for patients with lung disease. And so we've got this opportunity, which we're taking with both hands, to roll out AI reporting across the whole of Greater Manchester for every single chest x-ray that's done in Greater Manchester. So we're working on that at the moment, and it's a really, really exciting opportunity, because at the moment, people can wait weeks and occasionally more than a month for a chest x-ray report. And to be able to get one in seconds is a potential absolute game changer. So, yeah, that's another really exciting project that we've got on the boil.
Thank you so much for that. You know, it sounds absolutely amazing. But as I said at the start, that's only one of the two projects we're going to be talking about today. So the other one, I'll bring in Kath and Karen now. You've been waiting patiently in the wings. And Kath Hewitt, you're a lung cancer matron at Withenshaw Hospital. You can tell us all about this one-stop treatment clinic for lung cancer, how it's going to work, and why it's going to be so important.
So basically, everyone that has any sort of cancer, the first thing they do is have investigations to decide what stage that cancer's at. And once the decision's made as to the stage of the cancer, then it's down to what treatments are available. And for lung cancer, particularly if we're looking to cure lung cancer, the main two treatments are surgery and radiotherapy. And the decision made as to which of those treatments you should have depends on usually a number of different things. So the main thing is about your fitness. So we know that due to the fact that age, smoking history and other illnesses that patients have mean that not every patient is suitable for surgery. So the idea of the one-stop clinic is to try and get every patient that's suitable to see lots of specialists all on the same day. So what used to happen, or what does happen at the moment, is you'd go and see a surgeon, you'd find out about surgery, see whether that was a suitable treatment for you. If it wasn't, then you'd go and see the radiotherapy doctor, you'd go and see them, talk about treatments with them. If that wasn't the right thing and they needed some more answers, you may need to see an anaesthetist, you may need to see a different oncologist, and then you would maybe need to see somebody about your smoking. And all of that would mean lots of visits for somebody and a delay in making a decision.
So how does that differ to what's happened before?
So the one-stop clinic means that patients will come and they will see all of those specialists on that one day. So they'll be able to see any of the doctors that they need, all supported by the rest of the team.
And I think that speed you talk about is really, really important, isn't it? People want to know what their plan is. So what would a typical day look like for a patient attending this new clinic? Can you talk me through it?
So the way that it's going to run is that the day before they come to the clinic, they're going to get a phone call from one of the nursing team to say, hello, here we are, introduce what's going to happen, give them a little bit of sort of discussion about what the day will involve, who they're going to meet, who everybody will be, go through questions that they may have. It's a really anxious time, isn't it, when people come to clinics. So I think it's really important that we have that meet and greety type, you know, we're nice, we want to say hello, these are the things you can bring with you, make sure you bring a friend, family member, something to read, snacks, you know, all those, just those little things that people worry about, where to park. They're then going to be welcomed. So on the day that they arrive, they'll meet one of the nursing team. They'll go through their medical history with them. They'll do some fitness tests, blood tests, ECG, just run through lots of sort of physical bits with them and get a real feel as to what they want. What are their views on treatments? Are there things that they want to consider? Are there things they don't want to consider? What are their worries? What are they anxious about?
And it's not just the oncologists and the surgeons who are there, is it though? There's a whole extended team all there to support patients on the day.
Everybody sits in that MDT, the anaesthetist and the nurse that has met the patient. And they'll talk about what treatment options the patient can have, what things are available and what's suitable for the patient. The patient will then be seen by all of those different specialties that they need to be seen by. So the nurse and the patient will then see the oncologist if they need to, the surgeon if they need to, and as many of those specialists all in that same visit. At the same time, they'll be able to see the Lung Macmillan nurses who are there to support them, so Karen and her team. We've also got St. Anne's Hospice that are working with us, and they're very kindly going to offer some wraparound care, so complementary therapies. You're going to be able to have, while you're waiting, be able to have a massage maybe or some reflexology. The Cure, our smoking cessation service, are going to be there. So for any smokers, they'll be able to get on-site products, information about products, information about stopping smoking, just that general wraparound support that means we give people the best possible chance. Referral through to prehab, talking through exercise programs, anything that we can do to make sure that we optimize somebody to get the best out of treatment. At the end of all the appointments, they'll then be able to sit down with one of the nursing team and talk through what they want to do. If they want to make a decision and we've all agreed that a certain type of treatment's the right thing to do, then they can go away with a date for surgery or a date to start radiotherapy. If they want time to think about it, that's fine as well, because not everybody wants to make a decision on the day. So if they want to go away and think about it, they can. We're then going to follow them up with a phone call the day after to check that they're happy, they understood what they were told, happy with decisions that they've made. Do they need any more information? And obviously then the Lung Macmillan nurses will follow them up longer term and touch base with them again when they come in for the treatment. So a very busy day for patients, a lot to happen in one day. However, speed is what we get told by patients in all the studies that we want, is people just want decisions. They want something that's concrete. They want a plan. They want to go away with something in their hand that says, this is what I'm going to have done and when am I going to have it done.
You know, Matt, it sounds like we've talked about the patient experience, but it sounds like your experience on the medical side for the doctors and the nurses is going to be hugely enhanced, and your lives are going to be made an awful lot easier too.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you get to discuss with your colleagues in a face-to-face manner. So sometimes these decisions are complex and it's difficult, and it's such a valuable environment for an oncologist to be able to say to it, and a surgeon to actually just talk face-to-face about a case and say, well, if I did this, this is what I think would happen. Well, if I did this, I think this is what, you know, we can do. And it just... It's the level of care that we would all want, and it's something we've been fighting for quite some time to get in place. But it's taken time and it's complex to organise and to fund. But it's going to be a massive step forward for our patients.
I'll bring Karen in now. Karen Peplow, you're a Macmillan lung cancer nurse specialist. Just to remind people, we heard a little bit there about how it's going to work, but. In terms of the experience that you've seen firsthand that patients have had, how is this going to make a big difference to their experience?
Yeah, I think, as Kath said, what happens currently, I've got a lady I met in clinic yesterday that this is going to be happening to. So she'll have an appointment with the surgeon fairly quickly. She'll have an appointment with the radiotherapy team, again, fairly quickly. The anaesthetist will need to... have a meeting and then potentially meet the patient as well. The difficulty for this lady and for all the other patients is these happen separately. So she has a conversation and then she goes home. And then the next time she has a brand new conversation with another person and then goes home again. Holding on to the threads of all of that is really difficult. Not only that, having gaps in between, patients start to feel that nobody cares, or they've been abandoned, or they don't appreciate that we're having long conversations about them, even if they can't see or hear that. Being there for the morning, seeing everybody, hearing the conversations, knowing there's a meeting going on in the room next door, talking about you and what's right for you, just puts them back at the centre. And I don't believe they're not at the centre of those conversations, but sometimes as a patient, it doesn't feel like that. It feels like you've been missed or left, or nobody cares particularly.
You know, we saw exactly that while my wife Rachel was being treated for her breast cancer some years ago. It just doesn't always feel like people that work, you know, not alongside each other necessarily, but people who work in a hospital 5 miles down the road always know or always have access to the same information. And it was a real big gripe for us. And I know it is the same for other patients, and I know it's not always the fault of the individual, but it just feels like the system isn't set up to you know, to allow that sharing of information.
Yeah, and sometimes people are talking to each other, but the patient doesn't know that, or the family don't know that, because that continuity of conversation, it's the conclusion that we think we then give to the patient. But if that's taken 3 weeks, 3 weeks is not long if you've had five appointments, but 3 weeks is a long time when you're waiting for a plan and we've told you've got a cancer and we're trying to do some treatment to cure it, but we haven't told you what yet and you don't know where you're up to. So just pulling it together, the practicality, as Matt said, it'll be very good to have all those very important people in one room arguing with each other to the benefit of that patient. And I can say to that patient, they've had a huge discussion and they all think they're going to do best, and this person's coming out the top, and is this right for you? Is this what you want? Does this feel comfortable for you? Just puts them back at the centre of what we're doing, which is what we do, but it makes them feel like that, I think.
Karen, Matt talked earlier about patients not necessarily feeling worthy of seeing someone for whatever condition they're presenting with. It is that something that you see?
I absolutely agree, and I think you know, people, I say to my team, so the newer members of my team, what we have to remember sometimes is a diagnosis of lung cancer is one of loads of really significant problems some of these people are having in their lives. And actually, they are important enough to get all the treatments we offer them. They are important enough for us to do whatever we can to make sure they can access all the services in exactly the same way as every other patient. And if that means we have to, it's a running joke within our team, but if that means we have to get them a taxi to get here, then they are important enough for us to get them a taxi to get here to get the test done. I think it is about raising awareness that one, lung cancer is treatable, and there's lots and lots we can do. So it is important to go and get that X-ray, because if we find out it's a lung cancer, we can do something about it. I think there still is a perception that if we diagnose someone with lung cancer, they're not going to be here in 6 months. So what's the point? What's the point in doing that? Alongside, I'm busy, I've got to go to work. If I don't go to work, I don't get paid. If you make me an appointment 3 days in a row and I have to come to hospital, I can't go to work, I won't get paid. And that happens. One of the saddest cases I remember for us, and Kath will remember, is somebody that works within our own building, but not for the NHS, was worried about not coming to appointments because they weren't going to get paid if they were off sick, and they need to pay their bills. So we've got to find it. This is not just a physical health thing. We've got to find a way to support people with the whole side of things, the social, financial side of things, to get them through this and get them treated.
But Kath, I guess the thing that we have to think about is that while there is so much more work to do, and there are so many more challenges, lots and lots and lots that Matt outlined at the start of the podcast, on the positive side, so much is happening in Greater Manchester to look at that patient experience, to look at how we can diagnose earlier. And it's really exciting.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we do lung cancer screening, which is a whole big piece of work to try and get early diagnosis for patients. But I think what's important is that we support people throughout all of this process. And I think that we do that incredibly well now, but I think people need to know that they will be supported. I think if we don't support people, then they don't follow through with tests and investigations, they don't come to appointments. So I think that whole wraparound care that, you know, Karen and her team, they do an amazing job to support patients right from the beginning. And then if they come for tests and it's not cancer, it's still a really worrying time for people. So I think it's so important that when we introduce any new services or anything different for patients, that we do give them that support throughout the whole thing. We hold their hand, we carry them through the whole process from the start to the beginning to the end, because if we don't do that, it's no good just organizing tests, organizing new projects. We have to support patients or they won't play along.
Matt, before we finish, I'm gonna ask you to get your lung cancer crystal ball out, and we're gonna cast our minds forward 10 or 15 years. Where are we going to be? You know, it seems to me Manchester will still have its challenges. Greater Manchester will still have, you know, high levels of deprivation, socioeconomic challenges. But what's coming down the line? What should we be looking out for? What is getting you excited? And where are we going to be in 10, 15, 20 years' time?
I mean, you can look at every stage of this. I hope we are... By that point, we're seeing all the work that has been done in Greater Manchester to address tobacco dependency. And there is, because that is still the leading association with lung cancer, not the only one. But, and there's such a powerful program of work in Greater Manchester to make us tobacco free, to free this region of tobacco. And you know, I want to think in 20 years time, the a smoke-free generation is when the smoking prevalence is less than 5%. We're sat at about 15 across Greater Manchester, and at the highest points, it's about 20%. But we are working towards that smoke-free generation, and our children growing up in a smoke-free generation, which means their children may grow up in a world where lung cancer doesn't terrorize the communities of this region like it does today. But then where Kath mentioned screening and the lung health checks, where we've got CT scanners in supermarket car parks around the region, finding lung cancer before it's even caused any symptoms. That will pick out about 20% of all lung cancers. And that's 20% of those cancers that may well have presented at late stage and taken that person's life, that we can find early and treat. And for the other 80%, we need all of this work where we've got communities that feel empowered and justified at going and seeking help when they've got chest symptoms. And we've got programs that rapidly and efficiently process chest x-rays, CT scans, diagnostics, and then we make really good, efficient, patient-centered treatment decisions that incorporate all the latest technology, and surgery is changing. We're moving to robotic surgery for lung cancer. That is going to become the standard of care in years to come. Radiotherapy techniques are getting better and better and better to give more accurate, higher dose radiotherapy to more targeted areas that spares all the areas around it. And the drugs that we can use in lung cancer, I can't describe the change that's happened in the last 5 to 10 years. And that's continuing at pace. And we're starting to learn how these new drugs that that allow the body's own immune system to help fight cancer can be combined with things like surgery so that you get a double treatment that can be twice as effective. So the future is really bright for this, for what has been the darkest of pasts for this disease. But we've just got, it's about how we deliver that at scale and putting the infrastructure in place, the workforce and the infrastructure that can deliver this, and doing it faster than we ever planned to recover from this pandemic.
Well, thank you so much for all of that. It feels like we haven't even scratched the surface of what's an incredibly complex situation, but an amazingly positive situation as well, in terms of the work that's being done and the development and the innovation that's happening right across our region. So yeah, look forward to seeing so much of that come to fruition in the future. So thank you to Matt, to Seamus, to Karen, and to Kath, and of course, to you for listening to this episode of the GM Cancer Podcast.